Hotel and the event orders are per room each day, so you got to go through Fridays, each room setup, and Friday night setups, and Saturday setups, Saturday night setups, and Sunday setups. And
do they have crew that does that stuff?
Yeah, yeah, okay. They flip the rooms for us and everything.
Whew. Well, sucks that we have to get together as right now. I mean, week's busy, and it's been a shit show of a week anyway.
You've been having hell this week.
Yeah, this week has sucked. And then, was it Monday? So, if you follow the Scary Dad and or What's Awesome podcast Facebook pages and groups, I had to do an admin thing and put on post approval because I kept getting these spam posts from random people that would say that somebody died. Like, oh, today we say goodbye to, you know, and it would be somebody current and relevant, you know what I mean? It would be like today we say goodbye to Taylor Swift, or fans are saddened, you know, by like somebody that's out there doing stuff. But then sometimes you get one that was kind of a bizarre one. Well, anyway, I got, you know, one of them popped up, and I was like, immediately deleted. Like, that's crap. And then about an hour later, my wife sent me one, and then you posted something, and then they started coming in, and I was like, oh, crap, this is real.
It's crap. When I got it, I was just shocked, because it's not, I never expected to hear that. For some reason, I never thought this guy was ever going to die.
Well, that was exactly the way I took it. Was very much like,
and I walked downstairs and Noah was passing by us, and I said, dude, I'm gonna say it now. I said, dude, Pee-wee died. And he didn't believe me. He was like, yeah, you're joking. I said, no, Pee-wee died. And it's one of the most saddest things I've ever read, because he hid his illness for 6 years and left a note to release upon his death to his people.
It was
and
apology.
It's like, that was just insane,
I mean,
man.
It was, yeah. So today's episode, we're starting off with a shot and
to the legendary Paul Rubens. And that's the crazy thing, you know. Pee-wee's been in my life since I was probably 12, 13 years old, because that's when I started watching Cheech and Chong movies, and that was one of his first ventures out as far as film goes, was his roles in Cheech and Chong. I saw Nice Dreams in the theater.
Yeah.
And he was the Hamburger Man. And I remember years later, moved to Houston, went to Fry's Electronics. They had a Pee-wee's Playhouse box set, and my son was maybe 9, picked it up, and he became obsessed with it. And loved it. So we started watching the movies. And I even found the, there were picture books from Big Top Pee-wee that I bought for him. Mm-hmm. So, and it just, so my daughter, she followed right along, you know, watching the same stuff. So Olivia's like really shook. She just couldn't believe that it happened. But yeah, just every once in a while, just like I've said before, a celebrity or someone that was a big part of your life in entertainment passes away. And it literally hurts more than some family members that pass away.
I was going to say, because same thing. I mean, I posted on Facebook, and on the What's Awesome podcast, we did a whole episode on Pee-wee. Because, you know, Pee-wee's Big Adventure, Pee-wee's Playhouse, but, I mean, specifically Big Adventure, was transformative to so many kids my age.
Yeah.
I mean, it came out in 1985. So he had the HBO special, but I was, you know, it was an adult show. Mm-hmm. It was a late night comedy show that, you know, he played along, not on the same stage with, but on the same like schedule on HBO as people like Sam Kinison and Robin Williams.
Yeah,
because it was a grown up stage show, written by Paul Reubens and Phil Hartman.
Yeah, and produced by Pee Wee. He had to, like, kind of fund all that himself.
Yeah. And so, like, seeing Pee Wee's Big Adventure for the first time, and I just remember, like, it was weird. It was so weird. And I rewatched a lot of it last night watching my kids watch it. My daughter's sitting there trying to make sense of the stuff that he's doing and saying, and how can you expect this if that, and, you know, just various, you know, elements of the bizarre that were in Pee-wee's Big Adventure, just his whole entire morning routine and the conveyor belt making the breakfast, and yeah. Then he ends up eating just two bites of Mr. T cereal, and that's his breakfast.
Yeah, he made like eggs and all kinds of stuff, but just eat the cereal.
Yeah, he's just and not just two bites of it too, because you know he fed Mr. Breakfast the Mr. T cereal, you know. But I would have been like 10 years old. Mm-hmm. When that came out, 9, 10 years old. And then, of course, then after Pee-wee's Play or after Big Adventure came out, then, you know, scrolling through the old TV guide, and I see the, you know, the Pee-wee Herman show on you know, late night HBO. It was raunchy. It wasn't like over the top.
It was
raunchy.
For adults. It was just entertainment for.
But like, you know, and I remember because I didn't understand the joke, and it stuck in my head because I didn't understand the joke. But he's got mirrors on his shoes, so he can look up girls' skirts and see their underwear, and then he sticks his foot under so he could see the girl's underwear, and she's like, "I'm not wearing any underwear." And he's just like, "Oh, okay." You know, like all disappointed because he didn't get to see the draws. You know, like I didn't quite get the joke because, you know, I was a little kid and didn't get it. But, you know, but I do not think, like you said, I mean, I was always happily a fan of Pee Wee Herman.
Yeah.
I loved Big Adventure. Big Top Pee Wee was great. The stage show was awesome. Pee Wee's Playhouse was phenomenal. You know, it was so much fun. And I was a little older when Playhouse, maybe not whenever it was like in production, but whenever I was able to see it, because we had cable off and on throughout growing up. We didn't always have it. So sometimes we had it, sometimes we didn't. But I remember Playhouse was a little bit later and my sister being more interested in it than me. But I couldn't really walk through the room with it on and not get sucked in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, and so at that point, I would have been a little bit older, 12, 13. And at that point, you're like, oh, that's Pee-wee. It's silly. It's dumb. It's still
fun.
It's still fun. Still a lot of fun. So weird. And so just, like you say, just fun.
Right.
And somebody gave me the doll for Christmas.
I got mine in my room, you know.
Yeah. Yours is in the box still, right?
No, I don't have the box one. Yeah.
But, so
and even, you know, he pretty much lived life as Pee-wee Herman for a very, very long time. I mean, he would go on talk shows as the character. I mean, he was Larry the Cable Guy, you know, before Larry the Cable Guy was there. He was his character. And then he converted to Paul Reubens, which I gotta tell you, you have no idea how much I loved seeing him in cameos in different movies.
Mm-hmm.
And there were so many movies. And there's times where Paul Reubens does a cameo. You don't even realize it's Paul Reubens because you're so used to Pee-wee. And, you know, definitely one of the ones that sticks out is Batman.
Yeah,
Batman Returns. Dad. He's the Penguin's dad. You know, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. He's one of the vampires.
I promise you. Like, and I'm usually good at catching characters, like, you know, catching actors in character and being like, oh. I was halfway through Buffy before I realized that was him.
Right.
Like, because he's got like long blonde hair.
Yeah, he's got like long hair and he has the makeup and he's dressed differently. And another one that I didn't realize the first time I watched it. Remember, I told you one of my favorite episodes of Reno 911 is his cameo. I think the episode Rick is on the Case. And in that episode, he plays, it's obviously Paul Reubens, but he plays, remember the Guardian Angels? He's basically like a volunteer crime fighter that walks around in a Boy Scout uniform with a cape and a beret. And the whole episode, he speaks normally, but for whatever reason, he talks like this, like he has something wrong with his throat. And then Dango's constantly trying to get him to take a lozenge. The episode is hilarious, dude. And right at the end, you know, spoiler alert, ends up he's actually the criminal they're looking for, and that's why he's constantly ahead of the sheriff's department in finding stuff out, and he leaves them a tape to listen to, and they press play, and all of a sudden it's, it's Pee-wee's voice. It's the coolest shit. But he also made a cameo in the Reno 911 movie. It was the second time I watched it when I realized, wait, it's Paul Rubens, what the hell? And in that one he plays, remember Terry, the roller skating male prostitute? Uh-huh. He plays Terry's dad. And it's just an awesome cameo. But like, he has long hair. His hair is longer and he's wearing a fur coat. And, you know, he's just speaking like a normal dude. And I never realized that was Paul Rubin until the second time.
You know, when he's doing his, like, more adult stuff, and a lot of times it's a little unexpected because Pee-wee is such a childlike character and just full of wonder and innocence and stuff. When Paul Rubens got in trouble, whenever he got arrested and it became national news, let me say this, that I thought it was a really stupid thing to have done because he was rich enough that he could have just been hanging out at home, right?
Right.
But I didn't care because, I mean, especially at that time, those places were open for business 24/7, and people walked into them and out of them all day long.
That's where you're supposed to do that. That's where it happened.
I mean, that's, you know, and so I always felt really, really, really sorry for him. I mean, Playhouse had already been done. Like, I think it was already over. But they pulled it out of syndication. Like, they pulled there was a big Pee-wee backlash. But if you think about, Like last week on the show, we said, you know, on the pop charts in 1987, George Michael's "I Want Your Sex." Now, of course, nobody really knew, nobody knew that George Michael was gay at the time, right? But "I Want Your Sex" was a song that was on the radio, you know, on the radio, not on like underground hits or, you know, Spotify, because it didn't exist. Like, this was on the radio. Madonna was absolutely famous, right, for
being a little controversial.
For being very controversial. Right. And not knocking her in any way, but she was very, she was controversial on purpose. What is the word?
She was like doing it for the shock value.
Yeah, she was absolutely doing and saying things in order to get in trouble. Yeah. And the things that she said and did were nowhere, like, on a scale of what Paul Rubens did versus what Madonna did on stage, is like 0 to 1,000.
Right.
You know.
Well, I think one of the things.
I always felt bad because it kind of put a asterisk on his career, which it shouldn't have done. Right. And
well, one thing, you know, I kind of deep dove a little bit before this episode into his two major arrests that he had, and the first one being the incident at the Adult Theater. And honestly, I think one thing that might have been the cause of it blowing up, which I, like, this stuff I wasn't aware about before, but I found out now. Apparently, when he was initially arrested, he tried to not necessarily bribe the police, but was like,
he offered,
I will go ahead and I will do, you know, some service work for you guys. I will do some outreach stuff if you just let this go away. And apparently,
they accepted.
Apparently one of the news stations caught wind of it too at the same time. So he went to them and said, hey, I will do whatever I have to do. And I have a feeling that at that point, these people were like, hey, we got something really juicy here.
We got blood in the water.
Yeah. We need to strike now. And I think that might have made it kind of blow up even more than it should have. Because I'll be honest with you, and I told Noah this. I said, that's where you're supposed to do that. I have no ill will for that arrest with Pee-wee. Mm-hmm. His second arrest, he was being stupid. And he did some stuff that he was not very careful about. And he bought some things that he probably should not have. Even though, and I honestly, 100% believe he didn't realize that he owned that stuff.
There's the maybe didn't realize he owned it, but also I don't think he was being stupid per se. He fell under the investigation of Jeffrey Jones.
Yes.
So Jeffrey Jones got popped with actual, you know, underage and obscene material.
And Pee-wee had stuff that was kind of on the line.
Pee-wee had stuff that was on the line.
Yeah.
Well, Paul Rubens, no, Pee-wee didn't. Paul Rubens had stuff that was on the line that was in collections of stuff.
He bought, like, bulk collections.
That he bought bulk collections of. And they poured through it, like, with a fine-tooth comb to find stuff that they could pin on. So it wasn't like they busted into his house and he just had stacks of videotapes.
Right.
They had to, like, find, like, two or three items in a collection of 100,000 pieces.
Imagine I buy a 30,000 issue comic book collection, and one of the long boxes over here has something inappropriate that I shouldn't be owning. I'm not going to know that it's there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I bought something on somebody's word and picked it up, and, you know, so yeah, the second one, while...
Well, he was never convicted, I don't think.
No, he wasn't.
So
he pled to a lesser charge. They didn't try to pursue anything more than what they gave him. But yeah, but still, it was just another setback in an incredibly talented guy's life that he busted his ass to get to where he was, dude. He had to do a lot of stuff on his own.
Well, and, you know, we mentioned a few episodes ago that I read Elvira's book.
Mm-hmm.
And I had never realized how, you know, in the thick of it Elvira ever was. I mean, she's always been around, but I didn't realize how many connections she had throughout, you know, entertainment history.
Right.
But she was there. She was in the Groundlings. So basically, the long short around it was, Cassandra Peterson. This was before she was Elvira, but Cassandra Peterson was a showgirl in Vegas, and she met Elvis Presley. And in her conversation with Elvis, Elvis told her two things. He said, stay away from drugs, which she said was obviously ironic, but nobody knew that he was, you know, addicted to so many things. But he also said that you need to go to bed tonight and wake up tomorrow and get as far away from Las Vegas as you can, because this town will eat you alive. Like, you've got a shelf life as a showgirl. And then after that,
there's nothing else. Yeah.
There's nothing else. So she started thinking, like, okay, well, what do I want to do? And she started looking into some of this, like, self-manifesting, like, okay, if you want to be an astronaut, what do you need to do? Well, you obviously need to go to flight school.
Yeah.
So she was like, okay, well, I want to be a comedian. I want to be a funny actress. I want to make people laugh. And the, you know, what do I need to do that? It's like, well, then you need to go to classes, you know, acting classes, and you need to be around funny people who are working in that industry. Mm-hmm. And so she went and she joined a comedy troupe. It was a comedy improv troupe called the Groundlings. And inside of the Groundlings, was one of them was Paul Rubens and one of them was Phil Hartman.
Yeah.
And several other people that you know well if you see them on screen. In fact, I think John Lovitz was one. I'm not positive, but I think he was. And there's another guy named John that was Jombie in Pee-wee's Playhouse.
Yeah.
He was one. And so she would perform with this comedy troupe, you know, for audiences and stuff. But she said that, like, Phil and Paul were constantly working on the Pee-wee Herman stuff. Writing jokes, coming up with characters, coming up with scenes, just trying to figure out, like, the best formula for it. And if you remember, because Phil Hartman was in the Pee-wee Herman stage show as the sea captain, and he was in some of Pee-wee Playhouse as well.
Yeah,
he was in he's in Big Adventure as who was he in Big Adventure? I just saw it last night. He was at the theater. He was one of the reporters, I believe.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Asking the questions. Francis. Yeah. Yeah. And he's also in one of the Cheech and Chong movies with him too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Phil Hartman and they were writing partners. they were buddies.
Well, you know, it's interesting to see just like because it was evident with Cheech and Chong movies, with Reno 911, bring that up again. These groups of comedians, they take care of each other. And you'll see that if you look, for example, look at, you ever saw Balls of Fury?
Balls of Fury?
Balls of Fury. The movie with the, I can't remember his name right now. I told you the actor you'd recognize, but Christopher Walken, all kind of people are in it. But if you look at a movie like that and you look at Reno 911, the cameos in both of those things are all the same people. Because all these people support one another.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and that's one thing about that group. The Groundlings, they all supported each other and they wanted to see each other do well. It's impressive. It's like a family.
Well, then you look at Elvira and you look at Pee Wee Herman and her entire public life has been as Elvira.
Yeah.
You know, but she was in Big Adventure too. He invited her, gave her a cameo role. And in the book, she said that she wanted to be Monique, but he had already cast her. And she was one of the Groundlings.
Okay.
Monique.
The girl that played Monique.
So she got the biker chick. But, okay, so let's go back to Big Adventure. And for people who, maybe you know, it's 85, so it's a long time ago. And maybe you think it's dated, and maybe you think Pee-wee is all kitschy, and, you know, whatever. Do you understand, like, if you were to remove Pee-wee's Big Adventure from the lexicon, just from the zeitgeist, you probably wouldn't have The Simpsons, or not The Simpsons that you know. You wouldn't have Beetlejuice, you wouldn't have Batman, Batman Returns, the whole Tim Burton.
Because Tim Burton did Frankenweenie, and that's the reason he got Big Adventure.
Yeah.
They were like, hey, he did pretty good with that, let's see what he can do with this one.
Yeah.
And that launched it. That if you look at Pee-wee's Big Adventure, that is what honed his style.
That was 100%. That was Tim Burton without visuals, a whole lot of restraint.
Visuals, camera work, stop motion animation,
just being able just to
everything,
be,
just being outlandish, able to weird shit.
Be as weird as he wanted to be.
Yeah.
With a protagonist and a fellow writer, you know, an actor writer, who is. His goal is to be as weird as possible and still be relatable, but like anything goes. Well, we need stop motion. We need, you know, the the crazy bicycle stunts on the old beach cruiser, you know.
But it's amazing, and you got to wonder almost, you know, that helped Tim so much, and then Paul went through a very bad period, and then Tim like just blew up.
Kept putting him into movies,
and then Tim was like, hey. I got a movie coming up called Batman Returns. I want you to do a cameo in it. You know, I want you to do
this. We also put him in Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yes, yeah, yeah. I want you to do this for me. I want to keep you working because you helped me. It's amazing how that works with some of these
mm-hmm.
people. And it kind of tells you the character of a man if people are willing to, look, fuck that shit. You deserve better.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's impressive, man. Because the thing about it is, you know, you have the arrest. Tell me another negative thing you've ever heard about Paul Rubens. I have only heard just the most amazing stories about that man, and it kills me that I've never met him.
I know, and he was at that Dallas or the San Antonio show. It kills me
that
I've
never had a chance to meet him.
I wanted to go to that, and I, you know, like
just iconic.
I couldn't justify driving all the way to San Antonio for a signature because there was really nobody else at that fan expo that I wanted to see. But now,
but we had no idea he was sick. You know, I never thought he would ever die.
And I think that, too, I think that's why it struck me so bad. I mean, Tuesday was rough, man. It was already a rough day anyway. Because I got, you know, in my list of bullshit from the week, I also woke up Tuesday with a big-ass crick in my neck. So like, I was walking around like the kid with no neck.
I'm dealing with that myself. Like, don't worry. I think it's stress, but.
So my neck was hurting, and you know, Pee-wee died, and I'm sitting there reading all the tributes, and including the one from Rob Zombie, who's... Did you read that one?
Yeah, he worked on this. He got his start with Pee-wee.
Yeah, he said that he came in, like... He walked in, like, first day, and everybody did, like, some... Like, bonjour, Pee-wee, or something. And he said he walked in looking like his mugshot and kind of rolled his eyes and went into a meeting. Like, what? He's like, this is the first time I ever met him. I mean, he's like, people were kind of thought he was rude. I thought it was hilarious. But But then the tribute's coming out right now. But yeah, it was rough, dude. I was sitting there reading these tributes, and
it was seriously shocking. And like I said, I teared up when I read his note that he left. Yeah. I mean, there's no way that the man's been in my life for 30 years. You know, it's like, well,
and you also you never heard much about his personal life other than him getting in trouble. But like, you know, he closely guarded his life. Yeah. So, you know, it's like, oh, well, he got busted. It's like, was he gay? Was he straight? Was he married? Did he have a girlfriend or a boyfriend or, you know, any of those things? You don't know, because he kept his personal life so personal that, you know, I don't...
When you saw Pee Wee Herman, you didn't see Paul Reubens.
Yeah. And so I know very little about Paul Reubens himself as far as, like, you know. But I also think that is awesome for a person who pretty much lived his public life in character.
And you know, one thing I was thinking about, you know, he hid this for 6 years, okay, all through COVID and everything. And he was still making appearances up to like 1-2 years ago. And if you look at pictures people took with him, this guy had no mask on. People wanted to hug him. He was hugging him. You know, he really, and if you look at that note he left, he honestly loved and appreciated his fans.
Mm-hmm.
It is insane. When you look back and think about what was happening during that time, you know, it's incredibly fucking impressive.
Yeah. I'm going to miss that dude. I mean, those videos pop up every now and then, and it's such, you know, the world was so different then. You know, it was before the internet and stuff. But you'll see those pictures of, like, Pee Wee Herman and Elton John and David Lee Roth and, like, Elvira. You know, it's like, what kind of awesome party would that have been?
He built a fucking iconic image and brand. I mean, to the level of Jason's hockey mask.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody fucking knows Pee Wee Herman.
Oh, the bow tie.
Yes. The bow tie and the shoes from the tequila dance. It's like, that is ingrained in pop culture.
Well, and like I said, we watched it last night. I absolutely had to watch it last night. I was like, we gotta put on Pee Wee. We're going to talk about it on the show. I got to watch it. I got to see the girl. And I'd put it on before, and something happened. I think, you know, somebody got in trouble or fell off the couch or started crying. You know how kids are. And last night I was like, look, they're like, my older one's like, she's like, are we watching Pee-wee? I was like, we are watching Pee-wee. She's like, I was like, it's an hour and a half long. If you don't like it, go in your room. Like, that's rules.
Like, that's the way it is.
I'm watching this, and, you know, you're welcome to watch it with me. And it was very cute to watch my two girls, who are, you know, 12 and 9. Little one sitting there watching and watching and watching. And, you know, she's in rap. She's watching the whole thing. And every now and then she'll ask a question. It's like, well, how does he do that? You know, like, how does he get his suit on whenever he just jumps down the little bat pole? You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. The little fire. I was like, oh, you know, it's just a movie. And we both, Meg and I both had to tell him, if you're trying to make sense of this thing, it does not make sense. And he's not going to stop until he gets his bike back. Like, there's no, like, love. There's no friendship.
He's not worried about anything else but that bike.
He's like,
focused.
So, he's after his bike. So we're sitting here watching, and you know, and that's one thing. And I knew it to be true. But watching it last night, every scene, there is no third act slowdown. It's like every scene change from this scene to the next scene, every scene stands alone. Like, you could take the chapters on DVDs and you can just kind of close your eyes and push, like, hit number 7. It'll pop up and it'll be the scene at, like, the dinosaur museum. You know, the diner where he has to wash dishes and meets Simone and stuff. Or the bull riding scene. Or,
outlandish cowboy outfit he had.
Yeah. Or, you know, the scene at the Alamo. Or, you know, the scene riding through the Hollywood sets and destroying everything. It's like every scene, there's no filler in there. It's like everything is extremely tight and it doesn't fall off.
Yeah,
like
it doesn't slow down.
And, you know, right up until the very end, and you can, and everything's quotable. Like almost every line in the whole damn movie.
PG, Mr. Herman. PG, Mr. Herman, you have a phone call.
And the kids were both like, it's like, why is that movie so bad? I'm like, what? I was like, dude, the whole, like, you don't understand, like, the whole, like, layers of stuff. Like, this is the actor Paul Reubens and the director Tim Burton showing that when you have a very interesting story, which you've just seen, and you bring it to Hollywood, they're going to change it up on you and give you a role in your own movie and then dub your voice over. Yeah. Like, this is a commentary. Like, this is probably, like, on the surface, it's hilarious, but if you dig a little deeper, you're like,
it's a message.
They're saying
message.
Something. And it's so brilliant, but, like, even the overdubbed voice. Like he's so nervous behind the
His neck won't move. He just has, the whole body has to turn.
And when Brolin's like saying the lines, like there's 30 messages for Herman and 214, and you see him like pantomiming the lines back to him.
it's all on purpose, you know. And what I love is they just left it going. The scene where he's pulling the chain from the bicycle. And they didn't edit it properly where you can see the chain coming from outside the bicycle. They left that shit there on purpose. Yeah. They were like, this is just the way it is. You know, and just for people listening that don't realize just how huge of a deal Pee Wee Herman was. The Pee Wee's Playhouse children's show aired for 4 years. Just 4 years, that's it. It won. It wasn't nominated for. It won 22 Emmy Awards. Think about that shit. Not just nominated, it actually won. In those 4 years, it won 22 Emmy Awards. That is insane.
Yeah.
For, I mean, that is just unreal. You know, it was a phenomenon. You had Halloween costumes. You had dances. You had rap songs. You had the Pee Wee Herman dance as a rap song. Mm-hmm. You know, it was, the dude was, he was on top of the world, man.
Yeah. He was, he really was something special. That's the thing. And like you said, he was also timeless. Because he was a little kid the whole time.
Yeah.
He was a Peter Pan. He never grew up.
Right.
And that's why, you know, it's like, oh, he was 70. What? Pee Wee Herman's not, like, I don't know how old Pee Wee Herman is. You're not 70. I would give him like late 20s, early 30s, like the forever. Most. You know? And he's just like happy in his own little world. You know? He's happy with his little house and with all of his little decoys and animals and
his own collection of, just to have just everything that he loved. I mean, the dude just enjoyed life.
Like all of his stuff. Here's a picture of me with my bike. Here's a picture. What's different? Here's the pen I was buying. But what's like the significance? I don't know.
And like I said, what I love most is, you know, once he became Paul Reubens, you really got to see it. Such a different side. His scene in Blow.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Bobcat Goldthwait does a bit in his act about that whole scene with him, Paul Reubens, and Johnny Depp. And it's awesome. He talks about how, you know, they're doing the scene and shit. And Johnny Depp all of a sudden goes, is every one of us in this scene on parole right now? He starts talking about all their arrests and everything. Because at that time, Bobcat was on parole for trashing a green room on the Tonight Show. I don't know if you're aware about that incident. But yeah, so, you know, all these guys were just connected and everything. It's pretty awesome, man.
Yeah, I mean, he was a pretty major role in Blow.
Yeah, yeah. He's
the hairdresser.
Hairdresser, drug dealer. Yeah, oh, Paul Reubens, man. He will be sorely missed by generations of people. Like I said, he's been in my life for 30 years.
He was
in my kid's life.
And that's one of those things. It's like it's not that celebrity deaths don't affect me. It's not that they don't bother me. It's not that. It's that some affect me more than others. You know, it's like certain people pass away, and you're like, oh, did you hear that so-and-so died? And I'm like, oh, no, I didn't. And you go look it up. It's like, oh, they were 80, 90, 100 years old, you know? Or they've been, you know, fucked up on drugs for 30 years, and they finally just got over on them. And you're kind of like, man, okay, that sucks. And then you have one like this that's just like... Dude was that's the thing that hurts is because he wasn't 70, he was Pee-wee.
Yeah,
and Pee-wee doesn't age.
He's
forever young. He's an icon, and he, you know, people like him don't get sick. They get in trouble, right?
They make mistakes,
but they don't get sick, and they don't get hurt, and they don't die. And that's why it was so difficult to accept. Like, this isn't real. This. Not Pee-wee, no way. Like, that's not a thing. And, you know, but I can, you know, it's like I said last week when we were talking about Sinead O'Connor, it's like, even now, I'm still, like, all these people in different music groups and different, like, oh, here's a big Sinead O'Connor tribute. And I'm not second-guessing the fact that they liked her, but I'm still of the opinion that a lot, you know, like, death makes you refocus and reevaluate things.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and talking about Sinead O'Connor here, it's like, I know she was contrarian, and I know she was probably confrontational and disagreeable and all of those things that she was. And everybody, you know, complained that that's how she was. And those are the sorts of things that got her run right out of Hollywood, or, you know, right out of the record studio. And, you know, but then she dies and they flip a switch and turn all those into character traits instead of flaws. And it's like, okay, that's just rebranding, and it's kind of pathetic because she would be really pissed now.
Yeah.
she would be middle finger. You know, she just wanted to be accepted for who she was, and she didn't really achieve that. I mean, she tried. She didn't get that acceptance, but now she's dead, and everybody's like, oh, she was all of these things. I can say that I've been a huge Pee Wee Herman and Paul Rubens fan since I was 9 years old.
At least I can remember, yeah.
And there was nothing that he ever did that I can say that I truly disapproved of.
No.
As far as like, oh, he got in trouble for something stupid. Look, oh, how the mighty have fallen. I was like, that was stupid. But so is freaking like stubbing your toe on something and then kicking it because you stubbed out your toe. You're like, that was dumb, but it doesn't make you bad. It just makes you unlucky and having a bad day.
Well, just as an example.
I've loved that dude since I was 9 years old, and I am really going to miss him, you know?
Just as an example. Okay, so we moved to Houston when Noah was 2. So it must have actually been he was 5 years old when I bought my Pee Wee Herman box set. Okay. Because I remember distinctly, there was a little boy from down the street named Kyle. When we first moved in, Kyle was maybe 4, 5 years old. The day we're moving into the house, this little kid shows up and just walks in the house. No parents around or anything, and that was Kyle. Kyle was a trip. I never saw Kyle wear a pair of shoes. Kyle had a lot of bug bites on his legs. It was just a really odd thing with Kyle. So... I remember one day, and all of a sudden, and Kyle latched on to my 2-year-old son, and they became friends, and they used to hang out all the time. And, you know, a few years after we moved there, Noah's watching Pee Wee Herman. Kyle, at that time, you know, he was a little bit older than Noah. He sees that Noah's watching Pee Wee Herman, and he goes, isn't that that pedophile guy? And I stopped that little bastard right there, and I said, you will not talk bad about Pee Wee Herman in this house. The man made a mistake. He did what he did, and that's it. I felt offended, as though someone had talked about a family member. I was like, you will not shame Pee Wee Herman to my son and make my son think that that's a bad man that he's watching.
Yeah, and he wasn't.
He was a man that had a couple of flaws. He didn't hurt anybody.
Well, and like I said, I think second arrest, he was targeted, and they combed through looking to see if they could find something. And if you read, you said you did a deep dive. I read over it too. They didn't find enough of anything that they thought would stick, but they found a couple of things
that were on, like on the line. Yeah.
And they're like, oh, we're not going to press any charges. And then somebody came back around and was like, yeah, we're going to go ahead and press charges. And it was like, but then he got off.
Yeah.
Like he got acquitted. So buying collections of stuff that, you know, again, we talk about we buy shit, buy and sell shit all the time. If, you know, I'm up at the place and they're like, hey, they're good. We got a long box of comics, and I buy it and I bring it home, and then the police come knocking on my door being like, hey, one of your long boxes is full of dope. Be like, well, I was not buying dope whenever I bought yeah. this box of comics.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
So, you know, and I realize that I'm in possession of it at the moment, but it certainly was not my intent, right. And I didn't know it was in there. So, fuck off. Those are, you know, no. He didn't deserve all of the shit that he got no. for all of the stuff that he did that was so much less than all of his contemporaries did on stage and in movies.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I think the one that he actually, the thing that put him over was he was in possession of Rob Lowe's sex tape.
Yeah.
And Rob Lowe had already gotten, you know, like, already done the time for that, or he'd already been convicted, or whatever Rob Lowe dealt with. But you ever seen that episode of The Simpsons where a comic book guy, like, they go and they raid his archives, and they're like, whoa. It's the one where Mr. Rogers is cussing. It's drunk Mr. Rogers, you know. There are people with video collections and stuff because there's like 6 copies in existence because it's, you know, illegal. Right. And there's a few people that have one just because they're like, okay, don't tell anybody I have this. But it's that super, super secret shit. And it doesn't make them a freaking pedophile. It makes them a freaking weird-ass collector.
Yeah.
So... because there's a lot of that old stuff back in the day, you know, especially whenever... It's like, it's weird how, like, cameras and movie cameras didn't exist. And then as soon as they did, they're like, okay, let's get naked.
Yeah.
Like, immediately.
Let's make some home movies.
So, you know, you buy a collection of that, there's going to be something in there that somebody's going to find just a little bit untoward, but right. It doesn't make the character of the person owning it any bad.
No.
But I don't want to end the episode talking about that. I'm going to talk about how much I love this dude.
He was just, like, iconic and just a part of my life for a very, very long time. And he, like I said, he's going to be sorely, sorely missed.
He deserves all the tributes he's getting.
Just all the stories, pictures.
I really, really wish, because I know that he was sick, and I know that he was, like you said, he was connected, and Tim Burton helped him out, and knew, like, all these different people. I honestly really wish that he could see the outpouring of love that people are doing for him. Like,
right.
They're, you know, everybody's talking about Pee-wee, and good, because yeah. he, you know, they should. But yeah, I'm going to miss that guy.
Definitely.
All right, man. I don't have much left.
No.
I think that's. I think tonight we're gonna watch Big Top.
Yeah, I was thinking about this.
Either pick Big Top, or I might just start a binge of Playhouse.
I still got the DVDs at home, so.
It's. All right, man. Let's pour out one more.
Yes.
There you go. One more for old.
Old Pee Wee Herman, Paul Reubens, the man himself. And we shall be back on horror next week, of course, but just this is a huge part of our life that we wanted to talk about. So.
Yes.
Rest in power, Mr. Reubens.
Keep it scary.
Later.